quick schemes. This one went awry. Was it embezzlement? Was it fraud? No, nothing quite that simple.
We, the jury, in the above-entitled action, having found the defendant, Joe Hunt, guilty of murder...
He was sentenced to life without parole in Folsom Prison, California, for the murder of Ronald Levin, a Beverly Hills con man who conned Joe Hunt and his friends. Hunt said nothing during his trial, never testified in his own defense. He says he would never kill anybody, let alone for money.
That's one of the things that's so abhorrent to me about this whole thing. The money, and money, was never a big issue for Joseph Hunt. You just don't do that sort of thing.
Back in the early 70s at the prestigious Los Angeles prep school, the Harvard School for Boys, he was the scholarship student surrounded by the sons of the rich and famous of Beverly Hills. There was Tom and Dave May, Evan Dicker. His pals Dean Carney, Ben Dosti, and the rest knew him as Joe Gamsky, a championship debater and kind of a studious nerd. But when he surfaced years later in L.A., he was Joe Hunt. To him, it had the ring of big money, as in H.L. and the Hunt brothers. So did the name of his new company, BBC Consolidated.
What was the BBC supposed to be?
Well, the initials started when we were back just hanging out together, and they stood for the Bombay Bicycle Club.
And not the Billionaire?
Never.
Billionaire Boys Club.
Yes, sir.
Joanne Meltzer was one of the BBC secretaries.
I thought they were just playing business, dressed up in their father's suits. I really just kept thinking it was a game to them.
Playing business.
Playing business, playing office. They were in at 10, lunch at 12, and out by 3. They worked a 3-hour day.
They all lived in lavish condominiums and drove fancy cars. Where'd all the money come from? Some came from the boys' own pockets. But it turns out that Hunt's real talent was getting money from investors. He was operating as a commodities broker, bringing in cash and using it to fuel the BBC lifestyle. Cash from investors like Steve Weiss.
He had a system that was top secret, that couldn't lose, that couldn't go wrong.
Weiss and his relatives gave Hunt almost $1 million to invest in commodities. Why would anyone give that kind of money to a 23-year-old?
He had an ability to convince, to charm, to impress.
But what Weiss and the other investors in California didn't know was that back in Chicago, when Hunt was a trader on the mercantile exchange, he was suspended for improper conduct.
I wasn't charged with taking anybody's money or theft or anything of that sort. I was charged with a technical rule violation of putting the same people's money in the same numbered account.
That's absolutely not true.
John Trollstrup was the head of enforcement for the Chicago Mercantile Exchange.
He appropriated funds. He stole the funds. He put them in his trading account, traded them, and lost them.
This is a guy who sat there and told me with a straight face that he was just guilty of a technical violation.
Joe is completely capable of telling you just that over and over again. And he would convince you if you didn't know otherwise.
Steve Weiss knew nothing about Hunt's past. All he knew was that his money was gone.
And I said, listen, you son of a bitch. There are only two of us in this room here. Why don't you tell me? You had no system. You fleeced us. You manipulated us. You lied to us. And I said, frankly, I don't give a damn what you think you might want to do to me, because I'm not at all afraid of you. I said, so you can tell me. And he never batted an eye, never blinked. Cool, cold, calculating, and couldn't care less about what would happen to anybody. It's just not within him.
Hunt had to find some cash in a hurry, and he targeted Ron Levin, a casual acquaintance, as his next investor. Levin told Hunt he'd give him access to a $5 million account he had in a stock brokerage house. Hunt accepted, started trading on the account, and quickly made lots of money.
This $5 million was run up to almost $14 million over 2.5 months, and I was elated. And the first thing I did was I had a big meeting with the BBC and said, boys, we've had a wonderful good fortune. I made $4 million. Now, obviously, some of this has to go to our investors, so we're going to separate about $1.5 million there, and you, Tom May, you get 400,000 of it, and you get 400,000. We divvied it all up.
Now, but there was nothing to divide up. What Hunt didn't know was that Levin himself was a con man. And as most cons go, this one is a little complicated, so listen carefully. Levin had gone to a stock brokerage house and told them he was making a television documentary about commodities trading. Said he wanted the brokerage house to set up a mock account for his production company so that he could chart the emotional highs and lows of a young broker, namely Joe Hunt. That brokerage house, believe it or not, agreed to make it look like Levin had $5 million in an account. And they agreed to keep the truth from Joe Hunt. Meanwhile, Levin was making real money from his scam. At the same time he was conning Hunt, he was using those bogus brokerage account statements to con other investors into thinking he was worth millions so he could borrow real money from them.
So this is a fellow that's playing the game three moves out. And I'm fatuously just running along with the very basic thought that I make this person money. He pays me, he has every interest in it because he wants to make more money with me, that sort of thing.
The bottom line here is you were had.
Yeah, I was running around thinking I had $4 million coming to me, making business decisions on it that ultimately affected 80 investors.
Hunt decided to get even, to murder Ron Levin and get the money Hunt thought he was owed. BBC member Dean Carney is now in the witness protection program. His face can't be shown. Carney told police that Hunt had let him in on a detailed plot to kill Levin with the help of BBC security chief Jim Pittman. Carney says that Hunt and Pittman went to Ron Levin's apartment in Beverly Hills, forced him to endorse a $1.5 million check over to Hunt and the BBC. Then they shot him in the head and dumped his body in Soledad Canyon. But to this day, no body has ever been found. When Ron Levin's mother first reported him missing, police weren't that surprised. Her son was facing a number of indictments himself for fraud and may have simply left town. But Mrs. Levin says he'd never do that.
Well, my son and I were so close. I spoke to him at least three times a week. I stopped by his house once or twice a week. And we've been that way all our lives. He just couldn't be anywhere in this world that he wouldn't get hold of me.
Shortly after they reported their son missing, Mr. Levin got a phone call from Joe Hunt.
He wanted to know if he could come down to the apartment. He left some papers in Ronnie's apartment, and could he pick it up? I says, no, I don't think so. I'm not letting anybody into this apartment.
Soon after that, Levin's father found those papers that Hunt seemed anxious to get his hands on, and he told a police detective.
And I said, you know, I says, I have a piece of paper, some paper that I found, that it's very puzzling to me. And he said, what is it? I said, let me show it to you. And when I showed that to Officer
Zoller,
he said, that's what I'm looking for.
What Mr. Levin had stumbled across was a seven-page list in Joe Hunt's own handwriting, apparently detailing a plan for the elimination of his son.
You drew up this list, right?
Yes, I did.
Why?
I drew it up as a prop in a plan to try and keep Levin from taking advantage of the BBC for a third time.
Hunt says he and several of the BBC members drew up the list merely in an effort to scare Levin, not to hurt him.
So you went over with this list?
Yes, I did.
The seven pages which said tape mouth, handcuff, put gloves on, kill dog, emphasis?
Yes. We tried to...
Handcuff?
It was supposed to be very lurid, and that was about as lurid of things that we could think of.
To frighten him into what? Coming up with the bucks for you?
No, absolutely not. See, this was just Levin get out of our lives.
The bottom line with this list here was that I'm involved with some guys who are prepared to kill you.
No, sir. It was a prop to indicate there was a plan of extortion, murder.
If somebody goes in here and you read this, you're going to tape my mouth, you're going to handcuff me, you're going to put gloves on, you're going to scan for a tape recorder.
Right.
It's obvious you don't want anyone to know who's doing this. You're going to kill the dog, for emphasis. Right. If you want some cooperation or you want some money or whatever, why are you going to kill the dog? I mean, that's a threat. I would read that as a threat.
Oh, absolutely.
If I'm Ron Levin, I'm going to read that as a threat. Okay? Uh-huh. So that if I don't give in to you then after you kill the dog, then what are you going to do? After you handcuff me and I don't give in, what are you going to do then? I'm going to say screw
let
you.
Let me answer that question for you, Ed, because it's the key question. The first thing is, you're thinking of this as a list for action. Like,
you're showing it to him as a list for action.
I'll show you something, if you allow me just a chance, because this is the cruxial issue, and I'm glad you give me the opportunity. What I was trying to do, as I said, was pretend I had this meeting where these things were discussed by these very heavy players, that I took notes as the meeting progressed. And that's why I didn't try and have anything that looked like it was some sort of official, the master plan type thing. This is what we're going to do to Ron Levin. It was supposed to look, and if you see, I even left doodles and stuff on it on purpose. I wrote my name on it. It was supposed to be taken seriously by Ron Levin. Unfortunately, it wasn't. After I went through my entire spiel about this with him, he said, "Don't con the con man, Joe. This is ridiculous."
Hunt's theory is that Levin took advantage of his idle threat and disappeared, faked his own death. And it is true that he's never been found. But BBC members testified in court that Joe Hunt told them flat out that he killed Ron Levin.
He said that he killed Ron Levin. Jim and I took care of Ron Levin or killed him. I don't know exactly.
Even bragged about it.
He said that it was a perfect crime, that there's no way in which we could be caught.
Jerry Eisenberg was the BBC's in-house attorney. When talk of murder entered the picture, he says many BBC members got scared.
I know a lot of people slept with guns next to their bed for quite a while.
What?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Who?
Me. Two or three other people. I was threatened. I know other people who were threatened.
Threatened by?
Joe Hunt.
What did he say?
If you have double-crossed me or you have anything involved with my downfall, I'm going to get you.
In the end, the jury believed Dean Kearney and the other BBC members. The jury didn't believe several witnesses who claimed to have seen Ron Levin in different parts of the country at the same time Hunt was standing trial for his murder. There were those who said only a guilty man could have been so cool and collected while a jury deliberated his fate.
If you could look at someone and tell from their face and their gestures whether they're telling the truth, but this is not a science, and it's something that's escaped human beings. I believe in the American judicial system. I am astonished that I was convicted, given the state of the evidence.
But there's more, because Joe Hunt is going to stand trial for yet another murder. And this time, there is a body. After that $1.5 million check that Hunt and Pittman extorted from Levin bounced, according to testimony in court, the boys set out to kill this man, Hediad Eslemania, an Iranian millionaire living in San Francisco. Hunt and several BBC members, including Eslemania's own son, have been accused of kidnapping the elder Eslemania, locking him in a steamer trunk and transporting him to Los Angeles, where they were going to hold him hostage in this rented house and torture him until he signed over his assets to his son, who would then give the money to Hunt. According to state witness Dean Kearney, who was promised immunity from prosecution if he testified against Hunt, all went according to plan until the old man died in the trunk on the way to L.A. Hunt says Kearney is lying in order to save his own skin, that if anyone murdered anybody, it was Kearney.
I recognize I made a series of blunders that perhaps will keep me here for the rest of my life. But I didn't kill anybody, so I don't walk with my head down. There's no shame. When I go up in San Francisco and face the death penalty again, I hope I'll do it with my head up, because I did my absolute best.
Joe Hunt continues to maintain his innocence and says someday Ron Levin will return. In the meantime, he awaits trial for the second murder. This time, it could be the gas chamber. What about the rest of the crowd? Jim Pittman, the so-called trigger man, pled guilty to accessory to murder after the fact, and Reza Eslemania has already been convicted in the kidnapping and murder of his father.